Okay, Parsha Shoftim. Rabbeinu B'chai begins with the pasuk in Perek Gimel. Pasuk in Zion of Mishlei, it says, the famous pasuk we all know, Derecha Darchei Noam, V'chol Nesivoseha Shalom. The ways of the Torah are pleasant and all its paths are shalom. That the whole Torah is shalom. So Rabbeinu B'chai has a long discussion here about shalom and how important it is and how fundamental it is. And all the brachos end with shalom and all the midos are nechtam with shalom, Hashem's name is shalom, and that we end all our shmon esrei, our whole davening to Hashem with hamavarech samar yisrael b'shalom, because I'll tell us that the kli hamachzik bracha. And he suggests that the way Chazal knew to end shmon esrei with shalom is because tefillah is keneged the korbanos, right? It's keneged tamidim tiknum, and the Torah lists in the Karbanos, it lists Shlomim last. The Pasuk says, Zosa Tara la'ola la'mincha l'chatas osham la'shlomim la'zevach ha'shlomim. La'milum la'zevach ha'shlomim. That's the Pasuk in Vayikra Zayin Lamed Zayin. So Shlomim is the last one in the Karbanos, so it's the last, that's why we end off Shmon Esrei with it. Anyway, it's all discussion there if you want about how great and important Shalom is. What does that got to do with Shoftim? Because since the world without Shoftim making rules and enforcing them would be chaos, and Shoftim are the ones that bring Shalom to the world. Therefore, we were given the mitzvah of making Shoftim and Shoftim in all cities and everywhere, and that's how he gets into Parsha Shoftim. Okay, and he has a little discussion here about the different types of Beis Dins. It's a halachic thing where there's the Beis Din of three. If you have a very small area with less than 120 people, if otherwise every city has a Beis Din of 23, and those, that's Minatara, and they can kill, and that's a full Beis Din. It's called Sanhedrin Katana. Then there's the major Beis Din, the Sanhedrin Gedola, the real Sanhedrin in the Beis HaMikdash, that's 71. He also brings from the Medrash that when Klal Yisrael does Mishpat, enforces Mishpat, so then Hashem deals with us with Rachamim. But if we aren't doing Mishpat, so then Hashem has to do it instead, and then the world is judged with din. So in other words, by us having din on this earth, we take it away from Shemayim, and in Shemayim, then they just deal with us with Rachamim. That is the importance of having Bakei Dinim that do din properly. Okay. Then we have the pasuk says, Tzedek, Tzedek, Tirdof, which he explains to mean the Tzedek, Tzedek is Tzedek b'maisim and Tzedek b'dvarim. Righteous in your actions and your words. Then we go on to talk about that when you find a ki matzi bekirbecha, and if you will find amongst you, bechad sharecha sharoshan malkech shalimach, someone who does evil and goes after avodah zara, then you have to get rid of that person. So it says ki matzi bekirbecha, if you will find inside of you. What does that mean, bekirbecha? So he says that Lashon of Bekir Becha means deep inside. Because he said usually sinners are not out in the open. They're usually hiding somewhere, doing things in private. Averus. So you have to check Bekir Becha. And he said it's like on Pesach. You check on Bedikas Chametz. You check for in the Churin and the Stakim and the hidden places. So that's the Lashon of Bekir Becha. You have to check when there's Averus, you got to check in the hidden places. And also it could be from the Lashon Mikrovecha, from your relatives. And even if even if a person who's a sinner is your relative, you don't say, oh, okay, I'm not going to say anything. If you're dealing with in a coercive society, you know, we're based in rules, you got to stop it. And it says, Yodcha Tiyabob Rishon, even if it's a relative, you can't be Mechapa, and then you get rid of Avodah Zarah. So then it says that he is, or she, is bowing down to Avodah Zarah. It says, Ve'yelach ve'yo, is Pasuk Gimel, Ve'yelach ve'avodah lehim acharim, Yishtach v'lehem l'shemesh, O le'yerech, O l'chol tzva, Shemayim, Asher lo tzivisi. They're bowing down to the heavens and the Shemayim that I did not command. So he asks, what does it mean, Asher lo tzivisi? Obviously lo tzivisi. What does that mean? He says, one possibility is, you know, like we know from the Rambam, that people used to think Hashem would be happy if they do Avodah Zarah and worship the sun and the moon, because the sun and the moon are Mishar Sei HaMelech. They are doing Hashem's will, and therefore serving them would be like an extension of, like, it's honoring the officer of the king. So maybe bowing down to the sun and the moons would be something good. So Hashem is saying, Lo tzivisi, no, I did not say to do that. Or it should be read like the Pashup Shot, tzivisi lo, that I said not to do it. Okay. So then it says, if you want to check out, this guy really did Avodah Zarah, you can't just believe anything. The Darash Deitev, the next pasuk says, you have to, if you hear it, the Darash Deitev, Yinei Emes Nachon Advar Nesa Toi Vazos B'Yisrael. So Rabbeinu Bechai says, the Darash Deitev, I don't know how he knows these stuff, but Heitev, he says, guess what, the you know, what's the gematria of Heitev? 26, Yudkei Vavkei. And that, Yudkei Vavkei. So, that's a remez that a Dayan has to be thinking as if he's in front of Hashem. As if, so, but the Rash Tehetev means be dorish in to check out whether this guy is guilty, knowing that Hashem is with you, is in front of you, and be take it very seriously. You should know the Shechina Shruya Kenegdo. That's a remez from the Rash Tehetev. Okay. So then we have the famous pasuk of in pasuk Ches Ki Palei Mimcha Davar La Mishpat. If you don't know something, Bein Dam La Dam, Bein Din La Din, and Bein Nega La Nega. If you don't know those three different things, and you go to the Shofet Asher Yeh Bayimim Hayim. Okay. So what are those three things? So Dam La Dam, that is, well, let's see, Rashi tells us that it is Dam Tami La Dam Tahar, and Bein Din La Din is Din Zakeh La Din Chayev. So one is talking about Dam, whether it's Tami or Tahar. Din is some kind of Choshen Mishpat question. And Bein Nega La Nega, Rashi says, is Nega Tami La Nega Tahar. Also some similar to Dam La Dam, which is Tami or Tahar. Okay, so Rabbeinu Bechai has a little different interpretation, which I think is interesting. He says Bein Dam La Dam is Bein Dam Naki La Dam Chayev, the blood of someone who is innocent versus the dam of someone who is chayev. Also brings the possibility of tahar versus tamei. Din ladin is money. And nega la nega, he says, is wounds. Wounds, to be done on wounds. Hakos v'chabalos. Okay, just pointing that out. All right, then we get into this discussion of having a king. It says that you shall som tasim alach hamelach. So Rabbeinu Bechai, this is a big machokas. We've shown him whether minui hamelach was a mitzvah or not a mitzvah. In the sense, like, was it a good thing or not, I should say. Like, because in Navi, when the Jews finally ask for a king, Shmuel gets very angry at them, Hashem gets angry at them. What did they do wrong after all? It's a mitzvah in the Torah. So Rabbeinu Bechai sounds like he thinks that the asking for a king is a bad thing in general, because they should be happy with just Hashem running the world, in other words, following the Torah. But Hashem didn't really want them to have a king, and after all, look at what the kings did. They were not always good. I mean, there were good ones, but there were some pretty bad ones. In the end, at the end of the piece in Rabbeinu Bechai, he sounds like he thinks it is a mitzvah, but it matters why you want the king. If you want a king for good reasons, to somehow rein in the bad people or something like that, then that's good. If you want a king for the wrong reasons, which is to be like the Goyim, then that's bad. Which is similar to the Ran, I think we've mentioned this before, that the Ran in his drashos says something similar, that having a king is a mitzvah. It's just why you want the king. That's the nekuda. If you want a king because you want to be like the other nations and you don't want to follow the Torah, you want to only have secular law, and that's why you want a king, because the Ran holds that that's what the point of a king is. So then that's bad. Yeah, but if you want a king for the right reasons, which is you want to keep the Torah, but you want to have a king to do the stuff where the Torah doesn't fit in a non-perfect society, whatever, without getting into that whole run. I think it's pretty famous, and we've mentioned it before. Anyway, the point is that it's up to your kavanah. If you want, if your point in having a king is to do the Ratzon Hashem, and because one way or another, having a king will help in that way, then that's fine and good and a mitzvah. But if your desire for a king is for the wrong reasons, which is to be like the Goyim, or because whatever other reason that's not L'Shem Shemayim, so then it's bad. Okay, now this king who is chosen it says, "Som tosim alecha melech asher yivcha Hashem alokecha." So Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar says that's to teach you that it's really Hashem who chooses who the king's going to be, and that's about everything. Hashem chooses all the rulers. It's all meis Hashem, and to remember that it's really the one. It's Hashem who chooses the rulers. Okay, then we have that when you have this king, he should not have too many horses, lest he take you back to Egypt, because that's where you get horses from. So now the question is, this Isser of going back to Egypt. Don't have a lot of horses, you might come back to Egypt. The Isser of going back to Egypt, is that an Isser that was said for all generations, you're never allowed to go visit Egypt or live there? Or was it just, or was not a Isser forever, just an Isser for that generation? So, Rabbeinu Bechai brings two possibilities. He says, first, that it's not a mitzvah l'doros. How could it be a mitzvah l'doros? Jews have lived in Egypt for all generations, including today. They're right, there was always big, or often big communities, I should say, in Alexandria, in Egypt, or different places in Egypt. So he says it can't be that there's really an Isser for forever. It was just an Isser for that generation. He says another possibility is that even if it is an Isser for generation, but it's for all generations, it's only an Isser for those who live in Israel to go back to Egypt. If you live in America, move to Egypt, that's fine. But if you live in Israel, move to Egypt, that's a problem, because it says, Lo soshev baderech hazeh, oh, do not go back on this way again. So don't go back on this way means going back from Israel back to Egypt. That's what's a problem. That's what you're not allowed to do forever. Nah, but today, to go from America to Egypt, that's mutter. So that's the second possibility. But the first possibility is that it was not a mitzvah l'doros. If you look in the Masada of Kuk Rabbeinu Bechai's, he brings there that it's... there seems to be some mefurish, several mefurish places that it says it was an Isser for forever. Like the Gemara in Sukkah and Daphne Nalef on Mabez, when it says the reason that the Yishuv that was in Alexandria in Egypt was wiped out is because they were over on this Isser of going back to Egypt. I don't know history well enough to know, but if they came from Israel back to Egypt, that would work with the second shot. Certainly, like the first shot, it seems to be a problem. If anyone could suggest that it was not an Isser l'doros, how do you read that Gemara? So he gives other Gemaras that maybe sound not like that, so maybe a machlokas hasugyas. I don't know. Anyway, it's a big discussion in the Rishonim whether where and how to apply that Isser of. If there's an Isser to move to Egypt, I believe the Rambam holds that it was a big Isser. I don't remember so well anymore. Anyway. But okay, anyway, Rabbeinu Bechai here, like I said, brings those two possibilities. Either that it's not a mitzvah l'doros, or if it is, it's only for people who live in Israel to move back that way, but not for people who live elsewhere. Okay, and what else can a king do? A king can't have too much money. Why not? Kesef ezav l'yar b'lo. So he quotes the Ibn Ezra, says, because then you'll end up taxing the people too much. It's too hard on the people. Hit it like that. That's the reason. It's going to be too hard on the people to tax us like that. Okay. Then we have the... we talk about the... kahuna. The matnas kahuna, the mishmaros. So he says, when he's talking about the mishmaros, he says, what was the Indian of the mishmaros? We know this chafdal and mishmaros kahuna. Why were there chafdal and mishmaros? So Rabbeinu Bechai says, because everything the Kohanim do, it's dugma of what's going on in Shemayim. So in Shemayim, there are three groups of malachim, each made up of 24 that praise Hashem. So too the Kohanim divided themselves up into mishmaros of 24. Then we have the thing of don't do any various different versions of magical stuff. And one is the Shoel of the Shoel Ov. Do not ask an Ov. An Ov is where they claim to bring up a dead person, and it speaks through their armpit and tells them the future. So the Rebbeinu Bechai brings three opinions about an Ov. One is the Rambam that says it's all baloney. there's no such thing, meaning the ovens don't work and it's all a scam, and there's some guy hiding in the back who's making noises and talking, but it really the whole thing's a scam. That's one possibility. Now we know the it's talked about it, right, Shaul asked the lady who was the Ove to bring up Shmuel, and she did, it seems, from the Psukim. And she saw Shaul, and she screamed and all this. Anyway, however the Rambam explains it, he says there that the whole thing's a scam. That's one pshat. Another pshat is that it's usually a scam, it just wasn't a scam that day. In other words, Hashem made an ace. Normally an ove, the second opinion, which he quotes B'Shem Rav Haigon, that normally an ove is a scam. But in the case of Shaul, because Hashem wanted Shaul to get the message from Shmuel about what was going to happen, he made that ove lady be successful, and that's why when Shmuel actually came up, she screamed. And the third opinion is that it really does work, but it only works during the first 12 months after the person dies, because the Gemara tells us that the first 12 months after a person dies, their neshama goes up and down, and so then that's when they can pull out, the ove can pull out the neshama to come. And he quotes that Gemara again that says that for the first 12 months when someone dies, their neshama goes up and down until their body is destroyed. After 12 months, then the neshama never comes down again. He just points out an interesting point, that business about their guf being destroyed is lavdavka, because even if the person's a mummy, it doesn't matter after 12 months. Or even if their body is blown up, none of that matters. For the first 12 months, the neshama keeps going up and down, and after 12 months, it stops. So they can't do the ov magic afterwards. Okay, then it goes on to talk about the Ari Miklat, and the Ari Miklat will be V'hayolanus Shama Kol Rotzeach. All Rotzchim can run to there. And of course, similar to something we said before, Rebbeinu B'chai never misses this. It says V'hayolanus Shama Kol Rotzeach, which is of course the osios of the name of Hashem, Yudke Vavke, that you could run to V'haya, you could run to Hashem, because that's the shame of Rachmim. So the Rotzeach could run to there. Okay. While we're on the subject, I just wanted to mention a very interesting thing I've heard from Rav Tversky, from the senior Rav Tversky from Milwaukee, who said that we're in Elul now, and one of the Ramazim for Elul is Ina liyada v'samti l'cham makam, talking about Rotzeach. I believe that particular pasuk is in Mishpatim. But it says, "V'halokim ina liyada v'samti l'cham makam la neshama." So if someone kills someone by accident, so then Hashem made an miklat for them to run away to. So ina liyado v'samti l'cha is Rashi Tevos Elul. What does that got to do with anything with Elul? Because we don't really mean to sin the whole year. Somehow it just ends up happening, those Averos. So Elul is a place to run away to. Elul is a place where we can run away back to Hashem and do tshuva. So ina liyado, which is Elul. Just happened. The Samti Lecha Makoms, El is that place where we can run away to do tshuva. Okay, just throwing that in. Next, it says Kasher Zomam. If you have Edim Zomamin, those are Edim. Two Edim come in and say, Reuven killed Shimon. Two other Edim come in and say, how in the world would you know that? You were with us at the time. That's Edim Zomamin. So we believe the second group. And the reason, as Rebbeinu B'chai explains, we believe the second group is because they're not contradicting the first group about whether Reuven killed Shimon, they're just saying, you were with us. So we believe them, and therefore we killed the first group of Edom if they were trying to get someone else killed. But if that first group of Edom that said Reuven killed Shimon did not successfully convince Beis Din to kill Reuven yet, so then that's Kasher Zomam v'lo Kasher Asher. We only kill the false Edom who were Huzam, who were found to have been elsewhere. We only kill them if the din did not happen yet. But once their edus caused someone to get killed, then we don't kill them, because it says kasher zamam, and we darshan v'lo kasher asa, or at least the Rishonim say those words. So, why is that? So, he brings from the Ramban that says, because if these two edim actually succeeded in getting someone killed, so at that, we assume that Beis Din has Ruach HaKodesh, and they didn't make a mistake, and it must be that guy was supposed to die anyway. Okay, that's the Ramban. Rebbeinu B'chai asks on that, so what? Why does that make these guys not guilty? If they came in and falsely claimed that Reuven killed Shimon, even if it's true that Reuven deserved to die, so that's got nothing to do with them. These guys are liars. So why don't we kill them anyway? So he answers basically that the whole thing is Gzeir Sakasov, and we don't kill them because the Torah doesn't say to kill them. But the whole thing is Gzeir Sakasov, and can't don't know exactly how and why. Okay, then we have at the end when they go to war, and the Kohen Mashiach Muhammad comes and gives them the speech, Hayori Virach Alevav should go home. So Rabbeinu Bechai says the Yari Virach Alevav, Yari is, he's afraid to hurt people. Yari Lahakos. Interesting. He's afraid to shoot a gun. Virach Alevav, he's afraid to get shot. You know, he's afraid to get beaten up. He's also afraid to hurt people. That's Yari Virach Alevav, he says. Okay, then he says some pretty interesting stuff about Melchemes Mitzvah in general. We know there's the Mechames Rishus. Mechames Rishus, he says, you're only killed all the Zacharim, but not anybody else. But in Mechames Mitzvah against the Shiva Abamin, then there's a Chiv to wipe out everything. So he says, what's the difference? So he says a Kabbalistic reason, because when Mechames Mitzvah, you're trying to topple their Tsar, so you have to destroy everything on earth that Tsar has shlit over, which includes everything. And then he says, if you're going to ask, if your heart bothers you, how can it be? How can you go after the children? How can that be? And then, right, so he says, first of all, it's Gzeiras HaKasuv. That's number one. I mean, because it's a pretty fundamental question. And then he brings here that the Gaonim talked about this a lot. This is a fundamental question. How could it be that there's a mitzvah by the Shiva Avimin of Lo Sechaya Kol Neshama? How could that be? Lo Sechaya Kol Neshama, even the Ketanim? And the answer is yes. How could that be? Well, one is we don't know. It's Gzeiras HaKasuv. Yes, it is B. That is what the mitzvah is. But it's Gzeiras HaKasuv. However, if you want to give some explanation to it, something to it, so he says, because these are nations that Hashem says are bad, and therefore, if they are to grow up, they will grow up bad. And if you're going to say, well, how do you know? Maybe they'll grow up good. Put them in the right family, they'll grow up good. Okay, that's why it's God talking. And Hashem is telling you that if you let them alive, they're not going to grow up good. They're going to grow up bad. And therefore, that's why they have to be all Nerugin. And then he just points out, this whole mitzvah is not absolute. There's always Kriyas L'Shalom. In other words, we come to the Shiva Amamin and offer them peace terms. They could leave. They could stay and be subjugated to Klal Yisrael, or there could be war, in which case there's Lo Sechaya Kol Neshama. But they have the option to leave, which the Girgashi did. They have the option to stay, but be avodim to Klal Yisrael like the Givonim did, and just not keep Sheva Mitzvos. Just keep Sheva Mitzvos. Or, if they don't want to do that, then they got war, and then it's Lo Sechaya Kol Neshama. Okay, the last story is the story, last part of the Parsha is the Egla Arufa. So by the Egla Arufa, we have someone got killed. We don't know who killed him. So the nearest city comes, and they bring this agala that was never worked in a place that was never worked. And the Sanhedrin come, and they say, we didn't kill him. And they wash their hands of it, and then they're orif the Egla. They kill the Egla. And that's a kapara, and they daven that it should be a kapara to the Klal Yisrael for that avira that was happened. What is the point of this? So there's different possibilities. So the Rambam says that the point of the Egla Rufa, of course, the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim always says things al pi, the seichel, and therefore he says that the point is that when everybody gets together for this whole Egla Rufa ceremony, so things are going to be more talked about. People are going to talk about the person that died. This is all an attempt to try to get a group think type together. Everyone come together, try to figure out, does anybody know who killed this guy? You know, it's a whole big process, a whole big to-do. So it'll help them catch the thief, the murderer. And the reason why you have to use, you get the city that is closest to the dead guy, that's because probably the Rotzeach was from there. It's usually how it happens. Somebody was in this, somebody murdered someone from that town. Okay, that's one possibility. Another possibility, which I personally have not heard of, which doesn't mean anything, but I had never heard of this, that there's something magical that goes on over here. If they're Osin Ritzono Shel Makom, So then what they do is they get this agola that never did malacha and therefore will not be comfortable in, well, will not and not want to be here in this nachal. And they wash their hands over the agola, sounds like literally, and say that we didn't kill this guy. And then kapir la'amcha Yisrael is milashon gilui, reveal who the murderer is. And then it says, v'nechapir lahem hadam, which means it gets revealed. So this Egla Rufa walks over to the Rotzeach's house. You got this? Not Egla Rufa, Egla. This cow will walk over to, if they're Osin Ratono Shalmakom, in other words, if they're Roy for this miracle, when they do this whole procedure, not where they kill the Agala, they just do this whole thing, they wash their hands over it, said we didn't do it, the Agala will walk over to the Rotzeach's house. So that'll be obvious who did it. It's obviously an ace, this whole thing. So, but if they weren't Osin Ratono Shalmakom, they didn't have this special schus, so then the agala would go nowhere, and then they'd kill it, and that would be the kapara with that, like normal, like the regular Egla Rufa story. So there was an ace there. Yeah, he also brings another possibility of also something sort of magical, that when this cow dies, some worm is made that goes there to the Rotzeach's house. I don't know. Anyway, just an interesting thing that this Agala is supposed to, based on the Medrash, is supposed to walk over there. Okay, and it says, Kapir la'amcha, so he says, there's a drush in the Psikta that says, Kapir la'amcha, this is what the Kohanim say, not the Kohanim, the Zikne Ha'ir. So they say, Kapir la'amcha, which is, Elo achayim shemiskaprim b'bamonam, and Asher Padisa is, Elo hamesim shemiskaprim b'mamon achayim. So the Kapir La'amcha is the people are alive. Asher Padisa is the people that you redeem. Those are the dead people who get a kapara by the live people giving money in their tzchus. So in other words, from this psikta, we see the source, or a source, that when someone gives money, l'ilu nishma somebody, gives money to stuck l'ilu nishma somebody, it really does something. That helps the people who are dead. I mean, not that you need that. That's where, this is one of the places it comes from. And that's what Bina B'chai says here. We learn from this that when a person gives tzedakah for someone who died, certainly if they're giving tzedakah, if it's a son giving for the father, so then it's a schus for the father, and that helps the father out. And he says, Huadin, if someone says Kaddish or any bracha in the basic Nesses, Betzibur, that's all in Ilui for that person's neshama. Okay, we'll stop here.